Would the other souls accept such a coincidence? We already knew they would not. Not entirely. They were looking. Would the search become more intense? But to be afraid of the seeker herself, that didn't make much sense. She was physically insignificant, probably smaller than Janie. I was stronger and faster than she was. I was surrounded by friends and allies, and she, inside these caves at least, was all alone. Two guns, the rifle and her own Glock, the very gun Ian had once envied, the gun that had killed my friend Wes, were trained on her at every moment. Only one thing had kept her alive until now, and it couldn't save her for long. Jeb had thought I might want to talk to her. That was all. Now that I was back, she was condemned to die within hours, whether I spoke to her or not. So why did I feel as though I was at the disadvantage? Why this strange premonition that she would be the one to walk away from our confrontation? I hadn't decided if I wanted to talk to her. At least that was what I'd told Jeb. Without a doubt, I did not want to talk to her. I was terrified to ever see her face again. A face that, no matter how I tried, I could not imagine looking frightened. But if I told them I had no desire for conversation, Aaron would shoot her. It would be like I'd given him the order to fire. Like I'd pulled the trigger. Or worse, Doc would try to cut her out of the human body. I flinched away from the memory of the silver blood smeared all over the hands of my friend. Melanie twisted uneasily, trying to escape the torment in my head. "Wanda, they're just going to shoot her. Don't panic." Should this comfort me? I couldn't avoid the imagined tableau. Aaron, the Seeker's gun in his hand, the Seeker's body slowly crumpling to the stone floor, the red blood pooling around her. "You don't have to watch." That wouldn't stop it from happening. Melanie's thoughts became a little frantic. "But we want her to die, right? She killed Wes. Besides, she can't stay alive, no matter what." She was right about everything, of course. It was true that there was no way the Seeker could stay alive. Imprisoned, she would work doggedly to escape. Freed, she would quickly be the death of all my family. It was true she had killed Wes. He was so young and so loved. His death left a burning agony in its wake. I understood the claim of human justice that demanded her life in return. It was also true that I wanted her to die.
"Wanda! Wanda!"
Jamie shook my arm. It took me a moment to realize that someone had called my name, perhaps many times already.
"Wanda!"
Jeb's voice asked again. I looked up. He was standing over me. His face was expressionless, the blank facade that meant he was in the grip of some strong emotion. His poker face.
"The boys want to know if you have any questions for the Seeker."
I put one hand to my forehead, trying to block the images there. "If I don't?"
"They're ready to be done with guard duty. It's a hard time. They'd rather be with their friends right now."
I nodded. "Okay, I guess I'd better go and see her at once, then." I shoved myself away from the wall and to my feet. My hands were shaking, so I clenched them into fists. "You don't have any questions. I'll think of some. Why prolong the inevitable? I have no idea." "You're trying to save her," Melanie accused, full of outrage. "There's no way to do that."
"No, there isn't. And you want her dead anyway. So let them shoot her."
I cringed. "You okay?" Jamie asked. I nodded, not trusting my voice enough to speak.
"You don't have to," Jeb told me, his eyes sharp on my face.
"It's okay," I whispered. Jamie's hand wrapped around mine, but I shook it off. "Stay here, Jamie. I'll come with you." My voice was stronger now. "Oh, no, you will not." We stared at each other for a moment, and for once I won the argument. He stuck his chin out stubbornly, but slouched back against the wall. Ian, too, seemed inclined to follow me out of the kitchen, but I stopped him in his tracks with a single look. Jared watched me go with an unfathomable expression.
She's a complainer, Jeb told me in a low voice as we walked back toward the hole. Not quiet like you were. Always asking for more. Food, water, pillows. She threatens a lot, too. The Seekers will get you all, that kind of thing. It's been hard on Brandt, especially. She's pushed his temper right to the edge.
I nodded. This did not surprise me one bit.
She hasn't tried to escape, though. A lot of talk and no action. Once the guns come up, she backs right down.
I recoiled.
My guess is she wants to live pretty dang bad, Jeb murmured to himself.
Are you sure this is the safest place to keep her? I asked, as we started down the black, twisting tunnel.
Jeb chuckled. You didn't find your way out, he reminded me. Sometimes the best hiding place is the one that's in plain sight.
My answer was flat. She's more motivated than I was.
The boys are keeping a sharp eye on her. Nothing to worry about.
We were almost there. The tunnel turned back on itself in a sharp V. How many times had I rounded this corner, my hand tracing along the inside of the pointed switchback, just like this? I'd never traced along the outside wall. It was uneven, with jutting rocks that would leave bruises and cause me to trip. Staying on the inside was a shorter walk anyway. When they'd first showed me that the V was not a V but a Y, two branches forking off from another tunnel, the tunnel, I'd felt pretty stupid. Like Jeb said, hiding things in plain sight was sometimes the cleverest route. The times I'd been desperate enough to even consider escaping the caves, my mind had skipped right over this place in my speculations. This was the hole, the prison. In my head, it was the darkest, deepest well in the caves. This was where they'd buried me. Even Mel, sneakier than I was, had never dreamed that they'd held me captive just a few paces from the exit. It wasn't even the only exit, but the other was small and tight, a crawl space. I hadn't found that one because I'd walked into these caves standing upright. I hadn't been looking for that kind of tunnel. Besides, I'd never explored the edges of Doc's hospital. I'd avoided it from the beginning. The voice, familiar even though it seemed part of another life, interrupted my thoughts. I wonder how you're still alive, eating like this. Ugh! Something plastic clattered against the rocks. I could see the blue light as we rounded the last corner. I didn't know humans had the patience to starve someone to death. That seems like too complex a plan for you short-sighted creatures to grasp. Jeb chuckled.
Gotta say, I'm impressed with those boys. Surprised they held up this long.
We turned into the lighted dead-end tunnel. Brandt and Aaron, both sitting as far as possible from the end of the tunnel where the Seeker paced, both with guns in their hands, sighed with relief when they saw us approaching.
Finally, Brandt muttered.
His face was etched in hard lines of grief. The Seeker halted in her pacing. I was surprised to see the conditions she was kept in. She was not stuffed into the tiny cramped hole, but comparatively free, stomping to and fro across the short width of the tunnel. On the floor, against the flat end of the tunnel, were a mat and a pillow. A plastic tray was tilted at an angle against the wall at about the midpoint of the cave. A few jicama roots lay scattered near it with a soup bowl. A little soup was splattered out from where that lay. This explained the clatter I'd just heard. She'd thrown her food. It looked as though she'd eaten most of it first, though. I stared at this relatively humane setup and felt an odd pain in my stomach. "Who did we kill?" Melanie muttered sullenly. This stung her, too.
"You want a minute with her?" Brandt asked me,
and the pain stabbed again. Had Brandt ever referred to me using a feminine pronoun? I wasn't surprised that Jeb had done this for the Seeker, but everyone else? "Yes," I whispered.
"Careful," Aaron cautioned. "She's an angry little thing."
I nodded. The others stayed where they were. I walked down the tunnel alone. It was hard to lift my eyes, to meet the gaze that I could feel like cold fingers pressing against my face. The Seeker was glaring at me, a harsh sneer twisting her features. I'd never seen a soul use that expression before.
"Well, hello there, Melanie," she mocked me. "What took you so long to come visit?"
I didn't answer. I walked toward her slowly, trying hard to believe that the hate coursing through my body really did not belong to me.
"Did your little friends think I would talk to you? Spill all my secrets because you carry a gagged and lobotomized soul around in your head, reflecting through your eyes?"
She laughed abrasively. I stopped two long strides away from her, my body tensed to run. She made no aggressive move toward me, but I could not relax my muscles. This was not like meeting the Seeker on the highway. I didn't have the usual sensation of safety that I felt around the gentle others of my kind. Again, the strange conviction that she would live long after I was gone swept through me.
"Don't be ridiculous. Ask her your questions. Have you come up with any?" "So what do you want? Did you request permission to kill me personally, Melanie?" the Seeker hissed.
"They call me Wanda here," I said. She flinched slightly when I opened my lips to speak, as if expecting me to shout. My low, even voice seemed to upset her more than the scream she expected. I examined her face while she glared at me with her bulging eyes. It was dirty, stained with purple dust and dried sweat. Other than that, there wasn't a mark on it. Again, this gave me an odd ache.
"Wanda," she repeated in a flat voice. "Well, what are you waiting for? Didn't they give you the okay? Were you planning to use your bare hands or my gun?"
"I'm not here to kill you," she smiled sourly.
"To interrogate me, then? Where are your instruments of torture, human?"
I cringed. "I won't hurt you."
Insecurity flickered across her face and then vanished behind her sneer. "What are they keeping me for, then? Do they think I can be tamed like your pet soul?"
"No, they didn't want to kill you until they had consulted me in case I wanted to talk to you first."
Her lids lowered, narrowing her protruding eyes. "Do you have something to say?"
I swallowed. "I was wondering..." I only had the same question I'd been unable to answer for myself. "Why? Why couldn't you let me be dead like the rest of them? Why were you so determined to hunt me down? I didn't want to hurt anyone, I just wanted to go my own way."
She leaped up onto her toes, shoving her face toward mine. Someone moved behind me, but I couldn't hear more than that. She was shouting in my face. "Because I was right," she shrieked. "More than right. Look at them all, a vile nest of killers lurking in wait, just like I thought, only so much worse. I knew you were out here with them, one of them. I told them there was danger. I told them."
She stopped, panting, and took a step back from me, staring over my shoulder. I didn't look away to see what had made her retreat. I assumed it had something to do with what Jeb had just told me.
"Once the guns come up, she backs right down."
I analyzed her expression for a moment as her heavy breathing slowed.
"But they didn't listen to you, so you came for us alone."
The Seeker didn't answer. She took another step back from me, doubt twisting her expression. She looked oddly vulnerable for a second, as if my words had stripped away the shield she'd been hiding behind.
"They'll look for you, but in the end they never believed you at all, did they?"
I said, watching as each word was confirmed in her desperate eyes. It made me very sure. "So they won't take the search further than that. When they don't find you, their interest will fade. We'll be careful as usual. They won't find us."
Now I could see true fear in her eyes for the first time, the terrible to her knowledge that I was right, and I felt better for my nest of humans, my little family. I was right. They would be safe. Yet, incongruously, I didn't feel any better for myself. I had no more questions for the Seeker. When I walked away, she would die. Would they wait until I was far enough away not to hear the shot? Was there anywhere in the caves that was far enough for that? I stared at her angry, fearful face, and I knew how deeply I hated her.
How much I never wanted to see that face again for the rest of my lives. The hate that made it impossible for me to allow her to die. "I don't know how to save you," I whispered, too low for the humans to hear. Why did that sound like a lie in my ears? I can't think of a way.
Why would you want to? You're one of them.
But a spasm of hope sparked in her eyes. Jeb was right. All the bluster, all the threats. She wanted very much to stay alive. I nodded at her accusation, a little absently, because I was thinking hard and fast. "But still me," I murmured. I don't want... How to finish that sentence? I didn't want the Seeker to die? No, that wasn't true. I didn't want to hate the Seeker? To hate her so much that I wanted her to die, to have her die while I hated her, almost as if she died because of my hate. If I truly did not want her death, would I be able to think of a way to save her? Was it my hate that was blocking an answer? Would I be responsible if she died?
Are you insane? Melanie protested.
She'd killed my friend, shot him dead in the desert, broken Lily's heart. She'd put my family in danger. As long as she lived, she was a danger to them, to Ian, to Jamie, to Jared. She would do everything in her power to see them all dead.
That's more like it. Melanie approved of this train of thought.
But if she dies, and I could have saved her if I'd wanted to, who am I then?
You have to be practical, Wanda. This is a war. Whose side are you on?
You know the answer to that.
I do. And that's who you are, Wanda.
But what if I could do both? What if I could save her life and keep everyone here safe at the same time? A heavy wave of nausea rolled in my stomach as I saw the answer I'd been trying to believe didn't exist. The only wall I'd ever built between Melanie and me crumbled to the dust.
No,
Mel gasped, and then screamed, "No!" The answer I must have known I would find. The answer that explained my strange premonition. Because I could save the Seeker. Of course I could. But it would cost me. A trade. What had Kyle said? A life for a life. The Seeker stared at me, her dark eyes full of venom. Chapter 50. Sacrificed. The Seeker scrutinized my face while Mel and I fought.
No, Wanda, no!
Don't be stupid, Mel. You of all people should see the potential of this choice. Isn't this what you want? But even as I tried to look at the happy ending, I couldn't escape the horror of this choice. This was the secret I should die to protect. The information I'd been desperate to keep safe no matter what hideous torture I was put through. This was not the kind of torture I'd expected. A personal crisis of conscience, confused and complicated by love for my human family. Very painful, nevertheless. I could not claim to be an expatriate if I did this. No, I would be purely a traitor.
Not for her, Wanda! Not for her! Mel howled.
Should I wait? Wait until they catch another soul? An innocent soul whom I have no reason to hate? I'll have to make the decision sometime.
Not now! Wait! Think about this!
My stomach rolled again, and I had to hunch my body forward and take a deep breath. I just managed not to gag.
Wanda! Jeb called in concern.
I could do it, Mel. I could justify letting her die if she was one of those innocent souls. I could let them kill her then. I could trust myself to make an objective decision.
But she's horrible, Wanda! We hate her!
Exactly. And I can't trust myself. Look at how I almost didn't see the answer.
Wanda, you all right?
The Seeker glared past me toward Jeb's voice.
Fine, Jeb,
I gasped. My voice was breathy, strained. I was surprised at how bad it sounded. The Seeker's dark eyes flickered between us, unsure. Then she recoiled from me, cringing into the wall. I recognized the pose, remembered exactly how it felt to hold it. A gentle hand came down on my shoulder and spun me around.
"What's going on with you, hon?"
Jeb asked.
"I need a minute," I told him breathlessly.
I looked straight into his faded denim eyes and told him something that was most definitely not a lie.
"I have one more question, but I really need a minute to myself. Can you wait for me?"
"Sure, we can wait a little while more. Take a breather."
I nodded and walked as quickly as I could from the prison. My legs were stiff with terror at first, but I found my stride as I moved. By the time I passed Aaron and Brant, I was almost running.
"What happened?"
I heard Aaron whisper to Brant, his voice bewildered. I wasn't sure where to hide while I thought. My feet, like a shuttle on automatic pilot, took me through the corridors toward my sleeping room. I could only hope that it would be empty. It was dark, barely any light from the stars trickling down through the cracked ceiling. I didn't see Lily till I tripped over her in the darkness. I almost didn't recognize her tear-swollen face. She was curled into a tight, tiny ball on the floor in the middle of the passageway. Her eyes were wide, not quite comprehending who I was.
"Why?"
she asked me. I stared at her wordlessly.
"I said that life and love go on, but why do they? They shouldn't, not anymore. What's the point?"
"I don't know, Lily. I'm not sure what the point is."
"Why?"
she asked again, not speaking to me anymore. Her glassy eyes looked right through me. I stepped carefully past her and hurried to my room. I had my own question that had to be answered. To my great relief, the room was empty. I threw myself face down on the mattress where Jamie and I slept. When I'd told Jeb I had one more question, that was the truth. But the question was not for the Seeker. The question was for me. The question was, would I, not could I, do it? I could save the Seeker's life. I knew how. It would not endanger any of the lives here, except my own. I would have to trade that.
"No!"
Melanie tried to be firm through her panic.
"Please let me think."
"No!
This is the thing, Mel. It's inevitable anyway. I can see that now. I should have seen it long ago. It's so obvious."
"No, it isn't."
I remembered our conversation when Jamie was ill, when we were making up. I told her that I wouldn't erase her, and that I was sorry that I couldn't give her more than that. It wasn't so much a lie as it was an unfinished sentence. I couldn't give her more than that, and stay alive myself. The actual lie had been given to Jared. I'd told him just seconds later that I didn't know how to make myself not exist. In the context of our discussion, it was true. I didn't know how to fade away here inside Melanie. But I was surprised I hadn't heard the obvious lie right then. Hadn't seen in that moment what I was seeing now. Of course I knew how to make myself not exist. It was just that I'd never considered this option viable, ultimate betrayal that it was to every soul on this planet. Once the humans knew that I had this answer, the one they had murdered for over and over again, it would cost me.
"No, Wanda!
Don't you want to be free?"
A long pause. "I wouldn't ask you for this," she finally said. "And I wouldn't do it for you. And I sure as hell wouldn't do it for the Seeker."
"You don't have to ask. I think I might have volunteered, eventually."
"Why do you think that?" she demanded, her tone close to a sob.
"It touched me." I expected her to be elated. "In part because of them, Jared and Jamie. I can give them the whole world, everything they want. I can give them you. I probably would have realized that, someday. Who knows? Maybe Jared would have asked. You know I wouldn't have said no."
"Ian's right. You're too self-sacrificing. You don't have any limits. You need limits, Wanda."
"Ah, Ian," I moaned. A new pain twisted through me, surprisingly close to my heart. You'll take the whole world away from him. Everything he wants. It would never work with Ian. Not in this body, even though he loves it. It doesn't love him. Wanda, I... Melanie struggled for words. Still, the joy I expected from her did not come. Again, this touched me. I don't think I can let you do this. You're more important than that. In the bigger picture, you are of so much more value to them than I am. You can help them. You can save them. I can't do any of that. You have to stay. I can't see any other way, Mel. I wonder how I didn't see it sooner. It seems so completely obvious. Of course I have to go. Of course I have to give you yourself back. I already knew we souls were wrong to come here. So I don't have any choice now but to do the right thing and leave. You all survived without me before. You'll do it again. You've learned so much about the souls from me. You'll help them. Can't you see? This is the happy ending. It's the way they all need the story to finish. I can give them hope. I can give them... not a future, maybe not that. But as much as I can, everything I can. No, Wanda, no! She was crying, becoming incoherent. Her sorrow brought tears to my eyes. I'd no idea that she cared so much for me. Almost as much as I cared for her. I hadn't realized that we loved each other. Even if Jared had never asked me for this. Even if Jared did not exist. Once this path had occurred to me, I would have had to proceed down it. I loved her that much. No wonder the success rate for resistant hosts was so low here on Earth. Once we learned to love our human host, what hope did we souls have? We could not exist at the expense of one we loved. Not a soul. A soul could not live that way. I rolled myself over, and in the starlight I looked at my body. My hands were dirty and scratched, but under the surface blemishes they were beautiful. The skin was a pretty sun-browned color. Even bleached in the pale light, it was pretty. The nails were chewed short, but still healthy and smooth, with little half-moons of white at the bases. I fluttered my fingers, watching the muscles pull the bones in graceful patterns. I let them dance above me, where they became black fluid shapes against the stars. I ran them through my hair. It was almost to my shoulders now. Mel would like that. After a few weeks of shampoo in hotel showers and health vitamins, it was glossy and soft again. I stretched my arms out as far as they would go, tugging against the tendons until some of my joints cracked. My arms felt strong. They could pull me up a mountainside. They could carry a heavy load. They could plow a field. But they were also soft. They could hold a child. They could comfort a friend. They could love. But that was not for me. I took a deep breath, and tears welled out of the corners of my eyes and rolled down my temples into my hair. I tensed the muscles in my legs, felt their ready strength and speed. I wanted to run, to have an open field that I could race across just to see how fast I could go. I wanted to do this barefoot so I could feel the earth beneath my feet. I wanted to feel the wind fly through my hair. I wanted it to rain so that I could smell it in the air as I ran. My feet flexed and pointed slowly to the rhythm of my breathing. In and out, flex and point. It felt nice. I traced my face with my fingertips. They were warm on my skin, skin that was smooth and pretty. I was glad I was giving Melanie her face back the way it had been. I closed my eyes and stroked my eyelids. I'd lived in so many bodies, but never one I loved like this. Never one that I craved in this way. Of course, this would be the one I'd have to give up. The irony made me laugh, and I concentrated on the feel of the air that popped in little bubbles from my chest and up through my throat. Laughter was like a fresh breeze. It cleaned its way through the body, making everything feel good. Did other species have such a simple healer? I couldn't remember one. I touched my lips and remembered how it felt to kiss Jared, and how it felt to kiss Ian. Not everyone got to kiss so many other beautiful bodies. I'd had more than some, even in this short time. It was just so short. Maybe a year now, I wasn't completely sure. Just one quick revolution of a blue-green planet around an unexceptional yellow star. The shortest life of any I'd ever lived. The shortest, the most important, the most heartbreaking of lives. The life that would forever define me. The life that had finally tied me to one star, to one planet, to one small family of strangers. A little more time. Would that be so wrong? No, Mel whispered. Just take a little more time. You never know how much time you'll have, I whispered back. But I did. I knew exactly how much time I had. I couldn't take any more time. My time was up. I was going anyway. I had to do the right thing, be my true self with what time I had left. With a sigh that seemed to come all the way from the soles of my feet and the palms of my hands, I got up. Aaron and Brandt wouldn't wait forever, and now I had a few more questions that I needed answered. This time the questions were for Doc. The caves were full of sad, cast-down eyes. It was easy enough to slip unobtrusively past them all. No one cared what I was doing right now, except maybe Jeb, Brandt, and Aaron, and they weren't here. I didn't have an open, rainy field, but at least I had the long south tunnel. It was too dark to run flat out the way I wanted, but I kept up a steady jog. It felt good as my muscles warmed. I expected I would find Doc already there, but I'd wait if I had to. He would be alone. Poor Doc. That was usually the case now. Doc had been sleeping alone in his hospital since the night we'd saved Jamie's life. Sharon had taken her things from their room and moved them to her mother's, and Doc wouldn't sleep in the empty room. Such a great hatred. Sharon would rather kill her own happiness and Doc's, too, than forgive him for helping me heal Jamie. Sharon and Maggie were barely a presence in the caves anymore. They looked past everyone now, the way they used to look past only me. I wondered if that would change when I was gone, or if they were both so rigid in their grudge that it would be too late for them to change. What an extraordinarily stupid way to waste time. For the first time ever, the south tunnel felt short. Before I thought I'd gone halfway, I could see Doc's light glowing dimly from the rough arch ahead. He was home. I slowed myself to a walk before I interrupted him. I didn't want to scare him, to make him think there was an emergency. He was still startled when I appeared, a little breathless, in the stone doorway. He jumped up from behind his desk. The book he was reading fell out of his hands. "Wanda? Is something wrong?" "No, Doc," I reassured him. "Everything's fine."
"Does someone need me?"
"Just me." I gave him a weak smile. He walked around his desk to meet me, his eyes wide with curiosity. He paused half a step away and raised one eyebrow. His long face was gentle, the opposite of alarming. It was hard to remember how he'd looked like a monster to me before. "You are a man of your word," I began. He nodded and opened his mouth to speak, but I held one hand up. "No one will ever test that more than I will test it now," I warned him. He waited, eyes confused and wary. I took a deep breath, felt it expand my lungs. "I know how to do what you've been ending so many lives to discover. I know how to take the souls from your bodies without harm to either. Of course I know that. We all have to in case of an emergency. I even performed the emergency procedure once when I was a bear." I stared at him, waiting for his response. It took him a long moment, and his eyes grew wilder every second.
"Why are you telling me this?" he finally gasped.
"Because I am going to give you the knowledge you need." I held up my hand again. "But only if you will give me what I want in return. I'm warning you right now, it won't be any easier for you to give me what I want than it will be for me to give you what you want." His face was fiercer than I'd ever seen it.
"Name your terms."
"You can't kill them.
the souls you remove. You must give me your word, your promise, your oath, your vow, that you will give them safe conduct on to another life. This means some danger. You will have to have cryo tanks, and you will have to get those souls onto shuttles off-planet. You have to send them to another world to live, but they won't be able to hurt you. By the time they reach their next planet, your grandchildren will be dead. Would my conditions mitigate my guilt in this? Only if Doc could be trusted. He was thinking very hard as I explained. I watched his face to see what he would make of my demand. He didn't look angry, but his eyes were still wild.
"You don't want us to kill the Seeker?" he guessed.
I didn't answer his question because he wouldn't understand the answer. I did want them to kill her. That was the whole problem. Instead, I explained further. She'll be the first. The test. I want to make sure while I'm still here that you're going to follow through. I will do the separation myself. When she is safe, I'll teach you how it's done.
On who?
Kidnapped souls. The same as before. I can't guarantee you that the human minds will come back. I don't know if the erased can return. We'll see with the Seeker.
Doc blinked, processing something.
What do you mean, while you're still here? Are you leaving?
I stared at him, waiting for the realization to hit. He stared back, uncomprehending. Don't you realize what I'm giving you? I whispered. Finally, comprehension slammed home in his expression. I spoke quickly before he could. There's something else I'm going to ask you for, Doc. I won't be shipped off to another planet. This is my planet. It truly is. And yet, there's really no place for me here. So, I know it might offend some of the others. Don't tell them if you think they won't allow it. Lie if you have to. But I'd like to be buried by Walt and Wes. Can you do that for me? I won't take up much space.
I smiled weakly again.
No!
Melanie was shouting.
No, 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 no!
No, Wanda,
Doc objected to, with a shocked expression.
Please, Doc, I whispered, wincing against the protest in my head, which was getting louder. I don't think Wes or Walt will mind.
That's not what I meant. I can't kill you, Wanda. Ugh! I'm so sick of death! So sick of killing my friends!
Doc's voice caught in a sob. I put my hand on his thin arm, rubbed it.
People die here. It happens. Kyle had said something to that effect. Funny that I should quote Kyle of all people twice in one night.
What about Jared and Jamie?
Doc asked in a choked voice.
They'll have Melanie. They'll be fine.
Ian?
Through my teeth. Better off without me?
Doc shook his head, wiping at his eyes.
I need to think about this, Wanda.
We don't have long. They won't wait forever before they kill the Seeker.
I don't mean about that part. I agree to those terms. But I don't think I can kill you.
It's all or none, Doc. You have to decide right now. And,
I realized I had one more demand.
And you can't tell anyone else about the last part of our agreement. No one. Those are my terms. Take them or leave them. Do you want to know how to remove a soul from a human body?
Doc shook his head again.
Let me think.
You already know the answer, Doc. This is what you've been searching for. He just kept shaking his head slowly back and forth. I ignored that symbol of denial because we both knew his choice was made. I'll get Jared, I said. We'll make a quick raid for cryo tanks. Hold off the others. Tell them the truth. Tell them I'm going to help you get the Seeker out of that body.
Chapter 51. Prepared. I found Jared and Jamie in our room, waiting for me, worry on both their faces. Jared must have talked to Jeb.
Are you all right?
Jared asked me, while Jamie jumped up and threw his arms around my waist. I wasn't sure how to answer his question. I didn't know the answer.
Jared, I need your help.
Jared was on his feet as soon as I was done speaking. Jamie leaned back to look at my face. I didn't meet Jamie's gaze. I wasn't sure how much I could bear right now.
What do you need me to do? Jared asked.
I'm making a raid. I could use some extra muscle.
What are we after?
He was intense, already shifting into his mission mode. I'll explain on the way. We don't have a lot of time.
Can I come?
Jamie said. No, Jared and I said together. Jamie frowned and let me go, sinking down onto the mattress and crossing his legs. He put his face in his hands and sulked. I couldn't look directly at him before I ducked out of the room. I was already yearning to sit beside him, to hold him tight and forget this whole mess. Jared followed as I retraced my path through the south tunnel.
Why this way? He asked.
He would know if I tried to lie or evade. I don't want to run into anyone. Jeb, Aaron, or Brant, particularly.
Why?
I don't want to have to explain myself to them. Not yet. He was quiet, trying to make sense of my answer. I changed the subject. Do you know where Lily is? I don't think she should be alone. She seems...
Ian's with her.
That's good. He's the kindest. Ian would help Lily. He was exactly what she needed now. Who would help Ian when...
I shook my head, shaking the thought away. What are we in such a hurry to get? Jared asked me.
I took a deep breath before I answered him. Cryotanks. The south tunnel was black. I could not see his face. His footsteps did not falter beside me, and he didn't say anything for several minutes. When he spoke again, I could hear that he was focusing on the raid, single-minded, setting aside whatever curiosity he felt until after the mission was planned to his satisfaction.
Where do we get them?
Empty cryotanks are stored outside healing facilities until they're needed. With more souls coming in than leaving, there will be a surplus. No one will guard them. No one will notice if some go missing.
Are you sure? Where did you get this information?
I saw them in Chicago. Piles and piles of them. Even the little facility we went to in Tucson had a small store of them, crated outside the delivery bay.
If they were crated, then how can you be sure?
Haven't you noticed our fondness for labels?
I'm not doubting you, he said. I just want to make sure that you've thought this through.
I heard the double meaning in his words. I have.
Let's get it done, then.
Doc was already gone, already with Jeb, as we hadn't passed him on the way. He must have left right behind me. I wondered how his news was being taken. I hoped they weren't stupid enough to discuss it in front of the Seeker. Would she shred her human host's brain if she guessed what I was doing? Would she assume I'd turned traitor entirely? That I would give the humans what they needed with no restrictions? Wasn't that what I was about to do, though? When I was gone, would Doc bother to keep his word? Yes, he would try. I believed that. I had to believe that. But he couldn't do it alone. And who would help him? We scrambled up the tight black vent that opened onto the southern face of the rocky hill about halfway up the low peak. The eastern edge of the horizon was turning gray, with just a hint of pink bleeding into the line between sky and rock. My eyes were locked on my feet as I climbed down. It was necessary. There was no path, and the loose rocks made for treacherous footing. But even if the way had been paved and smooth, I doubted I would have been able to lift my eyes. My shoulders, too, seemed trapped in a slump. Traitor. Not a misfit, not a wanderer, just a traitor. I was putting my gentle brothers and sisters' lives into the angry and motivated hands of my adopted human family. My humans had every right to hate the souls. This was a war, and I was giving them a weapon, a way to kill with impunity. I considered this as we ran through the desert in the growing light of dawn. Ran, because with the Seekers looking, we shouldn't be out in the daylight. Focusing on this angle, viewing my choice not as a sacrifice, but rather as arming the humans in exchange for the Seeker's life, I knew that it was wrong. And if I was trying to save only the Seeker,
This would be the moment when I would change my mind and turn around. She wasn't worth selling out the others. Even she would agree with that.
Or would she? I suddenly wondered. The Seeker didn't seem to be as... what was the word Jared had used?
Altruistic. As altruistic as the rest of us. Maybe she would count her own life dearer than the lives of many. But it was too late to change my mind. I'd already thought far beyond just saving the Seeker. For one thing, this would happen again. The humans would kill any souls they came across unless I gave them another option. More than that, I was going to save Melanie, and that was worth the sacrifice. I was going to save Jared and Jamie, too. Might as well save the repugnant Seeker while I was at it. The souls were wrong to be here. My humans deserved their world. I could not give it back to them, but I could give them this. If only I could be sure that they would not be cruel. I would just have to trust Doc and hope. And maybe wring the promise from a few more of my friends, just in case. I wondered how many human lives I would save, how many souls' lives I might save. The only one I couldn't save now was myself. I sighed heavily. Even over the sound of our exerted breathing, Jared heard that. In my peripheral vision, I saw his face turn, felt his eyes boring into me, but I did not look over to meet his gaze. I stared at the ground. We got to the Jeep's hiding place before the sun had climbed over the eastern peaks, though the sky was already light blue. We ducked into the shallow cave just as the first rays painted the desert sand gold. Jared grabbed two bottles of water out of the back seat, tossed one to me, and then lounged against the wall. He gulped down half a bottle and wiped his mouth with the back of his hand before he spoke.
"I could tell you were in a hurry to get out of there, but we need to wait until dark if you're planning a smash and grab."
I swallowed my mouthful of water. "That's fine. I'm sure they'll wait for us now." His eyes searched my face.
"I saw your Seeker," he told me, watching my reaction. "She's energetic."
I nodded. "And vocal." He smiled and rolled his eyes.
"She doesn't seem to enjoy the accommodations we provided."
My gaze dropped to the floor. "Could be worse," I mumbled. The strangely jealous hurt I'd been feeling leaked, uninvited, into my voice.
"That's true," he agreed, his voice subdued.
"Why are they so kind to her?" I whispered. "She killed Wes."
"Well, that's your fault."
I stared up at him, surprised to see the slight curve of his mouth. He was teasing me. "Mine?" His small smile wavered.
"They didn't want to feel like monsters. Not again. They're trying to make up for before, only a little too late, and with the wrong soul. I didn't realize that would hurt your feelings. I would have thought you'd like it better that way."
"I do. I didn't want them to hurt anyone. It's always better to be kind.
I took a deep breath.
"I'm glad I know why." Their kindness was for me, not for her. My shoulders felt lighter.
"It's not a good feeling, knowing that you profoundly deserve the title of monster. It's better to be kind than to feel guilty."
He smiled again and then yawned. That made me yawn.
"Long night," he commented. "And we've got another one coming. We should sleep."
I was glad for his suggestion. I knew he had many questions about exactly what this raid meant. I also knew he would have already put several things together, and I didn't want to discuss any of it. I stretched out on the smooth patch of sand beside the Jeep. To my shock, Jared came to lie beside me. Right beside me, he curled around the curve of my back.
"Here," he said, and he reached around to slide his fingers under my face.
He pulled my head up from the ground and then moved his other arm under it, making a pillow for me. He let his other arm drape over my waist. It took a few seconds before I was able to respond. "Thanks," he yawned. I felt his breath warm the back of my neck.
"Get some rest, Wanda."
Holding me in what could only be considered an embrace, Jared fell asleep quickly, as he had always been able to do. I tried to relax with his arm warm around me, but it took a long time.
This embrace made me wonder how much he had already guessed. My weary thoughts tangled and twisted. Jared was right. It had been a very long night, though not half long enough. The rest of my days and nights were going to fly by as if they were only minutes. The next thing I knew, Jared was shaking me awake. The light in the little cavern was dim and orangey. Sunset. Jared pulled me to my feet and handed me a hiker's meal bar. This was the kind of rations they kept with the jeep. We ate and drank the rest of our water in silence. Jared's face was serious and focused.
"Still in a hurry?" he asked as we climbed into the jeep.
"No. I wanted the time to stretch out forever." "Yes."
What was the point in putting it off?
The Seeker and her body would die if we waited too long, and I would still have to make the same choice.
"We'll hit Phoenix, then. It's logical that they wouldn't notice this kind of raid. It doesn't make sense for humans to take your cold storage tanks. What possible use could we have for them?"
The question didn't sound at all rhetorical, and I could feel him looking at me again. But I stared ahead at the rocks and said nothing. It had been dark for a while by the time we traded vehicles and got to the freeway. Jared waited a few careful minutes with the inconspicuous sedan's lights off. I counted 10 cars passing by. Then there was a long darkness between the headlights, and Jared pulled onto the road. The trip to Phoenix was very short, though Jared kept the speed scrupulously below the limit. Time was speeding up, as if the earth were spinning faster. We settled into the steady-moving traffic, flowing with it along the highway that circled the flat, sprawling city. I saw the hospital from the road. We followed another car up the exit ramp, moving evenly, without hurry. Jared turned into the main parking lot.
"Where now?" he asked,
tense. "See if this road continues around the back. The tanks will be by a loading area." Jared drove slowly. There were many souls here, going in and out of the facility, some of them in scrubs, healers. No one paid us any particular attention. The road hugged the sidewalk, then curved around the north side of the building complex. "Look, shipping trucks, head that way." We passed between a wing of low buildings and a parking garage. Several trucks, delivering medical supplies no doubt, were backed into receiving ports. I scanned the crates on the dock, all labeled. "Keep going, though we might want to grab some of those on the way back. See? Heal, cool, still? I wonder what that one is." I liked that these supplies were labeled and left unguarded. My family wouldn't go without the things they needed when I was gone. When I was gone. It seemed that phrase was tacked onto all of my thoughts now. We rounded the back of another building. Jared drove a little faster and kept his eyes forward. There were people here, 4 of them, unloading a truck onto a dock. It was the exactness of their movements that caught my attention. They didn't handle the smallish boxes roughly. Quite the contrary. They placed them with infinite care onto the waist-high lip of concrete. I didn't really need the label for confirmation, but just then one of the unloaders turned his box so the black letters faced me directly. "This is the place we want. They're unloading occupied tanks right now. The empty ones won't be far... Ah, there, on the other side. That shed is half full of them. I'll bet the closed sheds are all the way full." Jared kept driving at the same careful speed, turning the corner to the side of the building. He snorted quietly. "What?" I asked.
"Figures. See?"
He jerked his chin toward the sign on the building. This was the maternity wing. "Ah," I said. "Well, you'll always know where to look, won't you?" His eyes flashed to my face when I said that, and then back to the road.
"We'll have to wait for a bit. Looked like they were almost finished."
Jared circled the hospital again, then parked at the back of the biggest lot, away from the lights. He killed the engine and slumped against the seat. He reached over and took my hand. I knew that he was about to ask, and I tried to prepare myself.
"Wanda?"
"Yes?"
"You're going to save the Seeker, aren't you?"
"Yes, I am."
"Because it's the right thing to do?" he guessed.
"That's one reason. He was silent for a moment.
You know how to get the soul out without hurting the body?
My heart thumped hard once, and I had to swallow before I could answer. Yes, I've done it before, in an emergency, not here.
Where? He asked. What was the emergency?
It was a story I'd never told them before, for obvious reasons. It was one of my best. Lots of action. Jamie would have loved it. I sighed and began in a low voice. On the Mists planet. I was with my friend Harness Light and a guide. I don't remember the guide's name. They called me Lives in the Stars there. I already had a bit of a reputation. Jared chuckled. We were making a pilgrimage across the fourth great ice field to see one of the more celebrated crystal cities. It was supposed to be a safe route. That's why there were only three of us. Claw beasts like to dig pits and bury themselves in the snow. Camouflage, you know, a trap. One moment there was nothing but the flat, endless snow. Then the next moment it seemed like the entire field of white was exploding into the sky. An average adult bear has about the mass of a buffalo. A full-grown claw beast is closer to the mass of a blue whale. This one was bigger than most. I couldn't see the guide. The claw beast had sprung up between us, facing where Harness Light and I stood. Bears are faster than claw beasts, but this one had the advantage of the ambush. Its huge, stone-like pincers swooped down and sheared Harness Light in half before I'd really processed what was happening. A car drove slowly down the side of the parking lot. We sat silent until it had passed. I hesitated. I should have started running, but my friend was dying there on the ice. Because of that hesitation, I would have died too if the claw beast hadn't been distracted. I found out later that our guide, I wish I could remember his name, had attacked the claw beast's tail, hoping to give us a chance to run. The claw beast's attack had stirred up enough snow that it was like a blizzard. The lack of visibility would help us escape. He didn't know it was already too late for Harness Light to run. The claw beast turned on the guide, and his second left leg kicked us, sending me flying. Harness Light's upper body landed beside me. His blood melted the snow. I paused to shudder. My next action made no sense because I had no body for Harness Light. We were midway between cities, much too far to run to either. It was probably cruel, too, to take him out with no painkillers. But I couldn't stand to let him die inside the broken half of his bare host. I used the back of my hand, the ice-cutting side. It was too wide a blade. It caused a lot of damage. I could only hope that Harness Light was far gone enough that he wouldn't feel the extra pain. Using my soft inside fingers, I coaxed Harness Light from the bear's brain. He was still alive. I barely paused to ascertain this. I shoved him into the egg pocket in the center of my body between the two hottest hearts. This would keep him from dying of cold, but he would only last a few short minutes without a body. And where would I find a host body in this empty waste? I thought of trying to share my host, but I doubted I could stay conscious through the procedure to insert him into my own head. And then, having no healing medicine, I would die quickly. With all those hearts, bears bled very fast. The claw beast roared, and I felt the ground shake as its huge paws thudded down. I didn't know where our guide was or if he lived. I didn't know how long it would take the claw beast to find us half buried in the snow. I was right beside the severed bear. The bright blood would draw the monster's eyes. And then I got this crazy idea. I paused to laugh quietly to myself. I didn't have a bear host for Harness Light. I couldn't use my body. The guide was dead or had fled. But there was one other body on the ice field. It was insanity, but all I could think of was Harness Light. We weren't even close friends, but I knew he was slowly dying, right between my hearts. I couldn't endure that. I heard the angry claw beast roaring, and I ran toward the sound. Soon I could see its thick white fur. I ran straight to its third left leg and launched myself as high up the leg as I could. I was a good jumper. I used all 6 of my hands, the knife sides, to yank myself up the side of the beast. It roared and spun, but that didn't help. Picture a dog chasing its tail. Clawbeasts have very small brains, a limited intelligence. I made it to the beast's back and ran up the double spine, digging in with my knives so that it couldn't shake me off. It only took seconds to get up to the beast's head, but that was where the greatest difficulty waited. My ice cutters were only about as long as your forearm, maybe. The claw beast's hide was twice as thick. I swung my arm down as hard as I could, slashing through the first layer of fur and membrane. The claw beast screamed and reared back on its hindmost legs. I almost fell. I lodged 4 of my hands into its hide. It screamed and thrashed. With the other 2, I took turns cutting at the gash I'd made. The skin was so thick and tough, I didn't know if I would be able to saw through. The claw beast went berserk. It shook so hard that it was all I could do to hold on for a moment. But time was running out for harness light. I shoved my hands into the hole and tried to rip it open. Then the claw beast threw itself backward onto the ice. If we hadn't been over its lair, the pit it had dug to hide in, that would have crushed me. As it was, though it knocked me silly, the fall actually helped. My knives were already in the beast's neck. When I hit the ground, the weight of the beast drove my cutters deep through its skin, deeper than I needed. We were both stunned. I was half smothered. I knew I had to do something right away, but I couldn't remember what it was. The beast started to roll, dazed. The fresh air cleared my head, and I remembered harness light. Protecting him from the cold as well as I could in the soft side of my hands, I moved him from my egg pocket into the claw beast's neck. The beast got to its feet and bucked again. This time I flew off. I'd let go of my hold to insert harness light, you see. The claw beast was infuriated. The wound on its head wasn't nearly enough to kill it, just annoy it. The snow had settled enough that I was in plain sight, especially as I was painted with the beast's blood. It's a very bright color, a color you don't have here. It raised its pincers, and they swung toward me. I thought that was it, and I was comforted a little that at least I would die trying. And then the pincers hit the snow beside me. I couldn't believe it had missed. I stared up at the huge, hideous face, and I almost had to, well, not laugh. Bears don't laugh. But that was the feeling, because that ugly face was torn with confusion and surprise and chagrin. No claw beast had ever worn such an expression before. It had taken Harness Light a few minutes to bind himself to the claw beast. It was such a big area, he really had to extend himself. But then he was in control. He was confused and slow. He didn't have much of a brain to work with, but it was enough that he knew I was his friend. I had to ride him to the Crystal City, to hold the wound closed on his neck until we could reach a healer. That caused quite a stir. For a while they called me Rides the Beast. I didn't like it. I made them go back to my other name. I'd been staring ahead toward the lights of the hospital and the figures of the souls crossing in front of those lights as I told the story. Now I looked at Jared for the first time. He was gaping at me, his eyes wide and his mouth hanging open. It really was one of my best stories. I'd have to get Mel to promise that she'd tell it to Jamie when I was... They're probably finished unloading, don't you think? I said quickly. Let's finish this and get back home. He stared at me for one more moment and then shook his head slowly.
Yes. Let's finish this, Wanderer. Lives in the stars. Rides the beast. Stealing a few unguarded crates won't present much of a challenge for you, will it?
Chapter 52 Separated. We brought our plunder in through the south vent, though this meant that the jeep would have to be moved before dawn. My main concern with using the bigger entrance was that the Seeker would hear the commotion our arrival was sure to cause. I wasn't sure if she had any idea of what I was going to do,
and I didn't want to give her any reason to kill her host and herself. The story Jeb had told me about on one of their captives, the man who had simply collapsed, leaving no external evidence on the outside of the havoc wreaked inside his skull, haunted my thoughts. The hospital was not empty. As I squeezed myself through the last tight bubble of space out into the main room, I found Doc preparing for the operation. His desk was laid out. On it, a propane lantern, the brightest illumination we had available, waited to be lit. The scalpels glinted in the duller blue light of the solar lamp. I had known that Doc would agree to my terms, but seeing him thus occupied sent a wave of nervous nausea through me. Or maybe it was just the memory of that other day that sickened